Dandelion Kitchen talks about food. Dandelion Kitchen talks recipes. Dandelion Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Dandelion Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, the center of it all. What a fine radio station. This is Community Radio. It's Community Radio. Yes, it is supported by people just like you. So, it's starting to be quite fallish out.
Autumnal. I always like that word.
Yes, it's fall is kind of a downer, as they say.
But some people love fall. Me, it's like, oh no, it means here comes winter and all the leaves are falling off the trees. And like, oh. Plus, of course, it's harvest time for corn and soybeans. So there's so much dust in the air. It's like, achoo, achoo, achoo.
That's what... See, I don't think I have problems with that, but
lucky you.
But I end up sneezing, and I'm not feeling ill, but I do end up sneezing for what I think is no apparent reason this time of year.
Yes, well, it's the corn and soybean season.
Oh, well, it is, and we haven't had the first frost yet.
Thank goodness.
But it has been cool enough that the garden is kind of saying goodbye. And if you go out to the garden now and happen to pick any tomato that might be left, it might taste just like it's been in the refrigerator for a while.
Yeah, it's a little flatter in flavor. And the corn, even though I bought corn from Ray Olson at the farmer's market, and it's wonderful. It's not as good as it was a few months ago. That's inevitable. But he's doing his best.
And it's good. I got some from Ray, too, because I put some in the freezer. I did.
Yeah, I shucked it off the cob, mm-hmm. carved it off the cob, and just put it in some rice and veggies last night, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, enjoy the last of the seasons here. Yes.
Well,
yes.
However... Squash and apples.
Oh, well, squash and apples.
You know, we are not done yet.
We're moving into the fall sort of things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, we are. And along with that, there was something in the news that we're going to talk about today.
Oh, yes.
On my email, I get these emergency announcements that this and this has been recalled and this has been recalled. It's surprising there's anything left to eat. We heard about cinnamon. There's something going on with cinnamon, and cinnamon is important. We're moving into the fall.
This is you know, people talk about pumpkin spice latte and all that, but really it's cinnamon season. Cinnamon in apples, cinnamon in your latte, cinnamon, and of course the cinnamon goes all the way through to Christmas. We can't have Christmas without a cinnamon spice. So
it's probably one of the more used spices.
I think it's the most common spice.
Yeah.
I read this years ago. If you're selling your house and somebody's coming to look at it, if you bake something in the oven with cinnamon in it, the flavors fills the house and you're much more likely to sell your home. How about that?
That's a bit of scientific data.
There you go.
That's good. Well, Donna, what did you find out about
cinnamon? You know, so a few months ago, I think we mentioned this, there was a lot of alarm because these packages that were geared towards children of cinnamon applesauce were found to have significantly high levels of lead. Now, everybody knows who's been following this from lead paint all the way through lead in the water in Michigan, and that high lead levels ingested by children are just terrible. And, you know, it causes mental retardation. And I mean, it is clearly not a good thing and something that every parent wants to avoid. So to find that these applesauce packets, which were specifically designed for, you know, lunch boxes and stuff like that, were just, I mean, and of course it wasn't the apples, it was the cinnamon in the applesauce. And that led us all down the rabbit hole to why is this cinnamon contaminated?
Was there cinnamon, lead in cinnamon found in other products?
Well, remember a few months ago, well, maybe it was a year ago, we did about the lead is now found in chocolate as well. Uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. Even if it's organic, you know, there's just no way to determine from brand to brand. The same thing has happened with cinnamon. Now, okay, here's my little rant. This is what I don't understand. It's the usual, you know, we can send a man to Mars. We can make rockets and ballistics that are flabbergastingly complex. How can we not figure out how lead is getting into our food system? We don't know. There's possibilities that it's, you know, plants draw minerals up from the soil. So possibility. And most cinnamon comes from Southeast Asia all the way up through China, that area of the world. And like a lot of other spices, it is also sourced from many, many small farmers. It's, you know, it is a, as we would call it, a third world product where there are lots of, I mean, it's not grown on 1,000-acre plantations or something. So controlling the supply sources, you know, kind of, there's a lot of diversity there. So why is the lead in the cinnamon? Don't know, right? It could be that certain soils, the plants are drawing it directly up from the soil. Okay, there are co-planting biological things that can be done to help mitigate that. But they don't know for sure that's the source. The other, another possibility is that it is in, you know, since it is processed in third world, particularly cinnamon if it's ground, that perhaps the machinery in the processing plants is contributing to the lead in the product. Another possibility is, okay, we have to remember, even though in the U.S. we all drive with unleaded gasoline, lots of parts of the world still have lead in their gasoline. So let's, this is a visual I get from reading this sort of thing. You know, the small farmer homestead people, they pick their cinnamon, and this is, it's a bark from the cinnamon tree. So they strip the bark off and they have piles of it or chips of it or whatever. And, you know, they carry it somehow on their donkey or their backs, and they place it near a roadway because then somebody is coming with a truck to pick it up to, you know, consolidate into larger, this is how they sell it and this is how the marketing works. So there's some speculation that in that process where the cinnamon or the chocolate, or even a few years ago there was turmeric, which is a root, were, you know, as it's piled beside the road, that the leaded gasoline fumes are contaminated. Another possibility. A further possibility, because the amounts of lead in the cinnamon is widely variable, that, of course, there are some unscrupulous dealers that are adding some kind of lead. I'd forgotten what it's a chemical, like lead chromate. I made that up, sorry. But it's something like that, that they're adding to adulterate the cinnamon, so they get more per pound.
Oh, make it heavier. Okay.
Yeah, right. Get the more cinnamon for the same amount of, you know, more money for less cinnamon kind of thing. So you'd think that these things could be sorted out with some diligence, but no, it's not happening. So we don't know why the lead is in the cinnamon. Okay, so Consumer Reports, God bless them, tested, because the U.S. government does not require, it's not required that spice companies test.
Oh, really?
Now, some of the more reputable ones do test, you know, I mean, but of course that costs them more money, so the more, that makes their product a little more expensive. So they have tested, I don't know, looks like, this was both in the New York Times and the Washington Post last week. So this is, you know, people are looking at this right now. And lead levels found in common cinnamon powders in parts per million. So this list is all things that are, they would say, supposedly you're not, it's better not to have higher than one part per million, right, of lead. But this goes up to 4, which they say You know, you can still eat this. However, so the highest one is called Paras, Paras. Don't even know that brand. Then it goes through, Happy Belly, I think, is the Amazon one. That's less than one. So all of these are less than one. Kirkland, Great Value, which we sell around here. Penzeys, which is a, Midwestern company. Trader Joe's, Spice Lab, Good and Gather. Oh, and there's two kinds of cinnamon. There's the Vietnamese, which is the sort of like, here's how I think of it when I smell it. Remember, you were a kid, they had little red hot candies? Okay, that's that spice, bite, spicy level of cinnamon. It's also called Vietnamese cinnamon. And then the softer, sweeter one, which is called soft stick or Ceylon cinnamon, is more fruity. I mean, I use that a lot in things that I don't want it to scream cinnamon, but you want that really under flavor. So Penzeys Vietnamese cinnamon, Morton and Bassett Penzeys regular cinnamon, I guess. Simply Organic, which is comes from Frontier Co-op, which is an Iowa company over by Cedar Rapids, Norwalk, I believe. 365 Whole Foods Market, Morton and Bassett Organic Cinnamon, Louisa's Organic Cinnamon, Sadef, and 365 Whole Foods Market Organic Cinnamon. So those are kind of all okay. If you have any doubts about your cinnamon, first of all, if it's old, just throw it out, go buy a new one. Cinnamon is like all of your ground spices. Once it's ground, it starts to, the volatile oils in the bark start to degrade and you get less oomph in it, So it's apple season. We're going into Christmas. Start with some new cinnamon. I always keep two kinds of cinnamon. I keep a jar of the Vietnamese. And sometimes I use both kinds when I want to, double in the flavor. And the Ceylon cinnamon, you can buy cinnamon sticks, and the really hard ones are the Vietnamese one. The soft stick cinnamon, which you can buy in any Mexican store or, like that, even then, in the international spice aisle or whatever, that's the Ceylon cinnamon. And I actually crush that with my fingers and put it in my it's a coffee grinder, but I use it only for spices and grind that myself. Not every time I use it, but I'll grind like 5 or 6 tablespoons and keep it in a jar so it's fresh ground. That's the one that's kind of, I don't know, Lana, how would you use that? How would you describe it? It's a little slightly orangey and a little fruity and
Yeah.
softer and mellower.
It's like cinnamon on toast, kind of.
Yeah,
It's more
yeah.
of a bakery. I don't, I think of it more as a
Yeah.
bakery thing.
I like. Now the other place to watch for cinnamon is, of course, it's in five spice mixes, it's in lots of curries. Read your brands. You can What I my takeaway from reading all the articles that I've read is actually cheap cinnamon is could be difficult. So, if you bought it at the Dollar Tree, careful. I
Yeah.
don't know. I think this is an instance where perhaps you're getting what you pay for. It's hard to make a judgment call on this, but I would take a look at it and my thing with food is always, if in doubt, don't. So, like I buy my cinnamon from Burlap and Barrel, and they have a statement on their webpage, which I was going to read to you, but now my computer is not pulling it up. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, what they said at Burlap and Barrel was basically that they, A, test their cinnamon. And they also talked about, because one of the reasons I like Burlap and Barrel is because their spices on the whole and herbs have a good strong flavor, which means they're fresher.
They're fresh, yeah.
Because this, and they're not the only company that does this, but they do source directly from the farmers and have a relationship with them. So, you know, it's kind of, you would call it fair trade, and it's, you know, their statement says, since we have a relationship, they know the people that they're buying it from. They're not just buying it from some large international conglomerate. They have a better, more traceability in their supply chain, and they do test.
Now, Burl Ap & Barrel is, you can't find that in stores.
It's online. Yeah, I order a lot from them because, as I said, the quality, you notice it in the flavor. It does work better that way. So that's my thing about cinnamon. And, you know, it's still true about chocolate because it has not stopped me from eating chocolate, I have to say.
But we should be aware that this stuff, especially when this stuff is traded, it's a commodity, it's marketed all over. There just may be some things in there that we didn't intend.
Well, and if you're feeding young children, that's where you really have to be cautious because, you know, our larger bodies we're not forming our brains for our life. We're already using them up, right? But if you're feeding young children, the effects that lead have on growing brains is, you know, noticeable. I mean, that's why they took lead paint off the market, and that's why we've unleaded our gasoline. It is a hazardous thing. So if you're feeding young children, you know, maybe they can have their applesauce without cinnamon for a few years or something like that. I don't know. Or pick carefully, or, you know, order from a company like Burl Ap & Barrel that is testing. And I'm sure they're not the only one, but those are questions you can, like, look up on the website. Like, I looked up Frontier, who it's a lovely company. I've used their organic spices for 40 years. It's an Iowa company. They don't have a statement about about cinnamon. So, you know, I suppose I could call them up and ask.
Well, maybe if enough of us ask, they will come up with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, I mean, it's a company I trust. So they've probably looked into it. They're just not publicizing it. Anyway, if you've got young babies, there you go. Pay attention.
Pay attention, yes. Because, like you mentioned earlier, cinnamon's kind of part of the season we're sliding into here.
Absolutely.
And also, it's part of the season because I picked apples off my apple tree. And we don't have a fancy apple tree. And so, you know, some of the apples, they've got bugs in them, and they get, but those get those get turned into applesauce. And
Or
apple crisp. Yeah, that's fine. I have a tree, an Empire tree, and a Northern Spy tree, and they're both tasty. And I made a big batch of applesauce this last weekend with all those knobbly ones that weren't, you know, they're just not, they just maybe got a little bit of character on the side there. And it's fine. I cook things down in some water. I chop the apples up into quarters, take out anything that looks terribly questionable. I mean, if anything is wiggling, I do take that out. And then I run it through. Still, I swear by my Vittorio food mill, which is a clamp-to-the-counter device with a handle on it that squashes vegetables and/or fruit through this sieve, and it has this circular drum.
Is that the one you use on tomatoes too?
Yeah, yeah.
To take the seeds and the pulp out.
It's got two spouts. The icky bits come out of one spout, mm-hmm. and the good bits come out of another spout. And now you have to make sure that things are cooked because you can't deal with lumps. But I put up quite a few quarts, and so there I am.
Oh, wait, you cook your apples down and then you run them through that mill?
Yes.
Oh, so that's what you're using instead of the cone thing that I used?
Yeah, it's same idea. It just is, I don't know, I find it.
Got a handle on it or something.
Yeah, a handle, and I find it's I don't know, moves a little faster, and I don't slop so much.
Because I use this thing that my mother used to call a ricer. So it's about, I don't know, what do you think, 12 or 14 inches high, big conical aluminum thing, right? With a stand on it, And then it's got this beautiful pointy wooden pestle that just rolls around inside of it. And,
yep.
And you know, people use it to make mashed potatoes, for example. But I use it on all of my, you know, my plum jam, my apple sauce, my apple butter, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I love it.
After I have this pile of applesauce.
Neither of these items, by the way, are electric or any have no computers to them or anything like that.
Oh, thank,
you know?
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
No, it's just all by hand. Anyway, after you have the pile of good applesauce with all the icky bits taken out, then I taste and decide. The Empire apples do need a little sugar. I put some sugar in it because I'm going to eat them in the wintertime. And I have put cinnamon in it. And that's kind of my favorite. If I want to put more in, I'll put in more later. But a little cinnamon, a little apples, a little sugar. And I've got my freezer bags full of applesauce.
Applesauce. Now, if you want to take it down even further, you take that applesauce and you put it in your slow cooker.
Ha!
And then you're going to get apple butter.
That's another good advice.
That's what I really love. Then that's actually even less volume, but I love apple butter. And sometimes, because you're concentrating the apples even more, you don't even have to put any sugar in.
Right, right.
Because that apple sugar is really good. And then, of course, you can flavor it the way you want. Cinnamon, obviously, or two kinds of cinnamon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cardamom is something I love to put in apple butter. You know, you can personalize this, and boy, does it make wonderful Christmas gifts too.
Yeah, I like how it cooks down and gets dark. I've done some apple butter recipes that have got a little dash of balsamic vinegar,
mm-hmm.
and something like sorghum or molasses in it, just to kind of darken it up.
Oh, yeah.
Make it kind of gutsy.
Deep flavors there. Yeah.
Well, thinking of applesauce and apple things here, I kind of dug back into the Donalana Kitchen archives and ran across something called an applesauce poem. And lo and behold, the applesauce poem was written by Ted Kooser. Ted Kooser, a beloved Midwestern poet. And the poem was read by Brenna Dixon, who was a student here quite a while ago, also studying writing at ISU. So here's a good poem about applesauce.
Applesauce by Ted Kooser. I liked how the starry blue lid of that saucepan lifted and puffed, then settled back on a thin hot pad of steam, and the way her kitchen filled with the warm, wet breath of apples, as if all the apples were talking at once, as if they'd come cold and sour from chores in the orchard and were trying to shoulder in close to the fire. She was too busy to put in her 2 cents worth of talking to apples. Squeezing her dentures with wrinkly lips, she had to jingle and stack the bright brass coins of the lids and thoughtfully count out the red rubber rings, then hold each jar to see if it was clean, to a window that looked out through her backyard into Iowa. And with every third or fourth jar, she wiped steam from her glasses, using the hem of her apron printed with tiny red sailboats that dipped along with leaf green banners, snapping under puffs of pale applesauce clouds, scented with cinnamon and cloves, the only boats under sail for at least 2,000 miles.
Thank you, Brenna.
Thank you.
That was a little thought about cooking that applesauce on the stove. It's always a lovely experience to do. A poem by Ted Kooser. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Donalana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Thank you.
Welcome back. We're celebrating fall things and fall flavors, and we were talking apples. We'll talk some apples some more. And Mike, our engineer, has a wonderful memory of an apple adventure that we had. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, well, you had the Australian gentleman, Barry McDonald, on and a few months ago, and he shared his a limerick that I thought was apropos for this particular program, and so I think I can get it right. There once was a widow from Hyde who ate some green apples and died. The apples fermented inside the lamented and made cider inside her inside.
I'm sorry, that's so funny. Even without the Australian accent, very good.
Thank you, Mike. I do like that. See, we share high literature and poetry here, and nothing is better.
Nothing better than a rhyme.
Yes, very good.
Oh, goodness.
Do you think you're going to stop your giggling enough to continue more to continue more information about apples?
Right. Well, okay, so, you know, it's, of course, it's apple season, so all the... You know, everybody, every food magazine has got something about apples, and the New York Times had one a couple of days ago. And what it did remind me, you know, started off with an apple a day keeps the doctor away, right? And we all know that eating apples is, you know, it's good for you. I mean, we grew up with that. And, but you know, in the last few years, everybody's talking about antioxidants and how blueberries are so wonderful, all of which is true, right? But the good old apple, that the common apple, is of course loaded with antioxidants, you know, and there was some, I think the New York Times said this one, something like if somebody who ate two apples a day had a reduced cancer risk. I mean, it was significant enough that it shows up in these dietary studies. And here are some things to remember when you're eating your apples. Particularly, and I would say this, if you can find an organic apple, this means that there's, you know, no pesticides on the peels. You should eat the peel if you can, because a lot of the nutrition is in the peel. Like I've been making, I made an apple crisp a couple of days ago. The question in my mind is always to peel or not to peel, you know, because some people don't like the peels in it. And they, you know, if you give them an apple pie with a peel in it, it's a little, the oogie bits or something. However, that's more nutrition. So if you can, eat the peels. Now, of course, I remember my mother peeling all the apples, you know, and that's a lot of extra work. But you are wasting the nutrition, right? I mean, what are you going to do? Give the peels to the chickens or something?
They like the
dead. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing to remember is that the darker colored the apple, meaning more red, it will have higher levels of antioxidants.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's good. Yep. Well, this applies to, you know, lots of, you can gauge the nutritional level by how deep red or deep green often, you know, a fruit or vegetable is. So, or like blueberries, which are very dark, they are very high in that. So the redder apples are, you know, have higher levels of antioxidants than like a Golden Delicious. It's like with cabbage. Red cabbage is even healthier than green cabbage, that sort of thing. So, you know, after reading that, I kept thinking, oh, right, I got it just, you know, I don't have to get exotic in my antioxidant search. Just eat apples. And don't forget about cider.
Oh, okay.
We have really good cider around here. All the grocery stores now have fresh cider. Like Deals is around here, or Wilson Orchard. Those are all Iowa family farms, basically. So get your cider now. It's really yummy.
Oh, we're going to be so healthy. That's good. And I have a little news item to share. Speaking of peels and antioxidants and colorful peelings, people are kind of perking up to the fact that we threw away a whole lot of pumpkins long about October. And they're figuring out how to get some nutrition out of this.
Yeah, right. I don't want to eat pumpkin peels.
No, but what they're doing. They're researching because pumpkins have the same antioxidants, high in carotene and
right. all that pumpkin, kind of stuff. Squash, sweet yeah, potatoes, and, all those orange carrots, all yeah. those orange vegetables.
So all of these pumpkins, they're making powder, pumpkin peel powder, referred to as PPP in the research. Pumpkin peel powder, and they're adding it because it really doesn't.
You don't notice
the flavor
it.
No, but especially they are. Putting it in things like yogurt, it evidently does, besides the nutrition part of it, it does really good things for the mouth feel of the yogurt and making things just absolutely yummy.
All right, well, let's tell the food science department at ISU yeah, about right. this, because they're all into formulating products. Yeah, so now, the other thing about peels. Apples and pectin is, of course, you're getting all those probiotics and fiber, and all of that's really good for your innards.
Fiber. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I'm not going to eat the pumpkin peels.
Well, they powder it up and put it in. Okay.
Right. All right, that's not something you can have to be concerned about in your home kitchen. Okay.
Well, I certainly hope a lot of the old used up pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns, they make really good animal food, too.
That's good. Yeah, feed that's them to good. The chickens. Or actually, good. You know, for years you've been reading, like, if you want to make homemade dog food or make extra treats for your dogs, you can either feed them canned pumpkin. Mm-hmm. In fact, some stores will keep canned pumpkin in the dog food section, mm-hmm. or sweet potatoes or another sorts of things. So, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. It's good for the dog, too. Mm-hmm.
Maybe
they've been putting pumpkin peels in dog food. That could be.
I think so. Anyway, another use.
Well, so
for
now
a
it's in your yogurt.
Thing.
Oh
a
my!
A fall thing.
Okay.
Another fall thing. I've been. I always do my bout of jam and jelly making.
We are jamming these days here.
Good year for plums. Last year was a year for peaches, and this year is a year for plums. And what do? We put them in jars. Donna has passed along a wonderful book called The River Cottage Handbook Number 2. It's a British series of culinary hints and recipes, and by Pam Corbin. Evidently, she has quite a...
Yeah, she's the jam and food preserved lady at River Cottage, which is Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. He has lots and lots of books. So this is a series, and it's a little... Nice little handbook. Both Lana and I have a copy of it.
Yeah, I refer to it for that. And this is one on preserves. Yeah,
it's very British, okay?
It's very British. So sometimes, I don't think she does things on pumpkins, but anyway.
No.
She does celebrate all things fruit. And actually gets into things like liqueurs and cordials and chutneys and things, too. But I was just reading it the other day, and she's got a whole... two pages here talking about not everything you put in jars is called jelly.
Jam and jelly.
Traditionally jams have got the fruit bits.
Right, they got the body of the fruit in it. Yeah. So they are thicker, mm-hmm. chunkier.
And jellies are translucent and smooth. The juice has been extracted, and
let's talk about the jelly bag.
Oh, thank you, Donna. Okay, to make jelly, you want to drain things.
Yeah, you cook the fruit down,
as in the plums.
Yeah, or currants, or Lana makes apple jelly
apple
too,
jelly
and things
too.
Like that. And then you put it in a jelly bag.
Jelly bag. Isn't that a nice
one? Yeah, I love that. So what I gave Lana for her birthday was this. I have one that was given to me years ago in France. It's a largish, I don't know, what do you make? 24 by 24, beautiful linen, very tightly woven linen cloth. It's a square, basically. So you put the fruit in that, and then you grab the corners and tie it all up and put a string around it, and then you hang the jelly bag over a pan, mm-hmm. or a bowl, mm-hmm. and it you know, for I don't know how long you
hang
it.
I do it overnight.
Overnight, yeah. So that all of the juice dribbles out. That's how you get your jelly clear.
Yes.
And the rest you feed to the chickens. Or you make into a powder and put in your yogurt.
You could. Yeah. But anyway, jelly bags.
Jelly is the most refined of all of the products,
I would say. It is.
And doesn't have any pulp in it.
No, and it's pretty. You put it up against the light and it's pretty.
It's like a jar of sunshine in the middle of the winter.
A French jelly bag is sometimes referred to as a chinoise.
Chinoise, no, that's a different thing.
Different thing?
Yeah, a chinoise is a conical strainer.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I was thinking straining.
Things. Yeah, right, okay.
This is just a French linen jelly bag. And it's a lovely thing.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
So there's jellies. And there's jams. Fruit and sugar boil together until they form into a mass. And then there's marmalades. Although originally referring to a type of quince jam, it has turned into anything that has a lot of citrus peel in it. And I do like a good marmalade.
Oh, yes. Me too. I love like even grapefruit marmalade.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Lemon marmalades are popular, although grapefruit is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. And then there's conserves. I've run across a term called conserves, which sounds ever so refined.
It's a little different from jam, mm-hmm. sort of, because what? It's not so mushed? What's the difference?
It's looser, and you macerate the fruit ahead of time.
In what?
Sugar.
Oh, okay, and then cook it.
Yeah, the juices of the fruit are sucked out usually in a dish overnight. Just by adding sugar to it, it makes the juices come out, and then you can slowly cook that. You don't destroy the integrity of the fruit so much. So there's chunks.
Oh, so there's bigger chunks. Bigger chunks. Fruit. Okay. You know, okay.
Very, very fancy. And then there's fruit butters. We talked about apple butter.
Yes, fruit are taking your like applesauce, for example, and just concentrating it by cooking it slowly down. And that's what we like to use the slow cooker.
Oh yeah,
crock pot.
Crock pot
is good because they don't burn.
Good idea.
Yeah. You can go to bed, and in the morning you wake up, and you have instead of applesauce, you have apple butter.
You have your Christmas gifts sitting there for. Here's a term that I was unfamiliar with. Fruit cheeses.
Yeah, that's not very American. I mean, the most common place you'll see it is like quince preserve. Okay. So it's when or fruit leather. Think of a fruit leather that's like half an inch thick.
Oh, okay.
So it cuts like a cheese. It's a kind of dried, more dried. Well, I suppose you would take your. I'm not saying this literally, but think about it this way: if your apple butter were then put on a sheet pan and put in a very, very low oven, it would eventually dehydrate into some sort of fruit cheese.
Yeah, a cuttable and put on a tray.
It's a preservation technique, kind of, to just reduce the liquid in the fruit more.
Here's another thing from this English book. Fruit curds, not true preserves, being very low in sugar, but creamy mixture of butter, eggs, and sugar, and an acid fruit.
Huh? Oh, like lemon curd.
Like lemon curd.
Or passion fruit curd. Oh, yummy, yummy, yummy.
Mm-hmm. And then you already mentioned.
Very rich from the butter.
Fruit leathers. Mm-hmm. Mincemeat, again, not a true sugar preserve, but alcohol plays its part in this process. Mixtures of dried fruit, apples, spices, citrus, sugar, suet sometimes, and alcohol. That's a fall thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I was actually yesterday thinking about, maybe I might make some mincemeat this year.
You have to
really start ahead because it has to sit for a while and age.
A lot of things. And there's fruit leathers and candied fruit. And candied fruit is like the candied oranges we talk about. Yes, it is.
Well, think apples now because we are in the thick of it and we are blessed. Iowa is a big apple growing region. And grapes, too, are coming in this time of year.
That's true.
Yeah. Grape jelly.
Great. Oh,
there, you could use your bag for that. Now, yes. The thing is, when you're using the jelly bag, mm-hmm. don't squeeze it.
Right.
Because squeezing it pushes through some of the fruit things and your jelly will not be clear. You have to, like, let it do its own thing with gravity.
So patience, patience. There's an art to this whole thing, and it's a lot
of
fun.
Yeah, you just hang it up and forget about it. It's the best way, right? To be patient,
that's
right?
That's the art. It's very Buddhist, too. Right. Very Zen. More with less. Just let it be. Yes. This is KHOI Community Radio. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. You can find out more about all the wonderful programs on this radio station. The Donalana Kitchen has a page there you can visit, find out past shows, and we have a recipe page. Donna, tell us about the Donalana Kitchen podcast, which is in addition to this radio.
Oh, right, we have a podcast, which means you can listen to us anywhere in the world that you listen to podcasts, because it's on all of the formats. You just go to wherever you get your podcasts, and you put in Donalana, which is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, second word, kitchen, and there we will be.
Good. Let's have a little bit more of that wonderful waltz. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about food news. Food news, yes, we are. We have a food news item here that should affect and be part of our discussion here in Iowa, because once again, Iowa ranks number one in something. And we can be so proud. I mean, this is football season. Everybody's being really number one about things. And this is a study done and a report put out by the Food and Water Watch organization. You can go to fwwatch.org to find more information on this. But Food and Water Watch ranks Iowa number one in U.S. factory farm waste.
Yes, we are the number one state in manure production.
You know,
hallelujah, boy, do we know how to shovel the you-know-what.
Somebody has to be, and yes, yeah, it is part of
agriculture. Oh, but we are significantly higher than anybody else.
This statistic is amazing.
So Iowa is the number one, and we have 25 times the state's human waste in animal waste.
Ooh.
Number two is Texas, which is only one-tenth, 2.5 times the human-to-animal ratio.
Yeah, now you have to think about population of the state, area of the state, and how many animals are in the state. But Iowa, just think of that, 25 times more factory farm waste is produced here than human waste.
Well, okay. Number four, though, we got some competition. Number four, Nebraska.
Whoa.
For their population, they produce less than we do because it's, less people, but they are 30 times the state's human waste. So we got some competition on this one. Lana has a suggestion for us.
Yes, since we produce so darn much of this stuff, I think we all need to go out and buy some really tall boots is what we need.
Yeah, some taller rubber boots is
taller
recommended
boots,
for
yes.
All Iowa residents.
Put that on
Because we are piling up the manure.
Put that on your Christmas list, because we are number one. That's a news item that we just had to share with you. That is good. Another thing I wanted to share. Often I read things on the internet. Beth Hoffman is a farmer in southern Iowa, and she posts things to read. She's also a writer, too.
She wrote the Bet the Farm book. Yeah,
we've talked to her about her book,
Bet the Farm.
Bet the Farm, yes. And she raises food. She's got a small farm down there that does different animals for sale. And she wrote an article on Substack recently entitled Five Reasons Why Paying More for Food is a Good Thing. Paying more for food somehow always gets to be on the politician's re-election campaign platform. People get just obsessed, and it is
a big deal this year because inflation, as we're calling it, is even I, who am used to paying more for food because I want the best quality, most flavor, blah blah blah, I'm alarmed at the cost of food now. For the first time in my many years of food system work. And it's an election issue that they're talking about. There was an article today about Lena Khan, who's the FTC chairman who works on monopolies. And she says, according to her, that actually the food inflation, which the large corporations are saying, it's because of supply chain constraints during the pandemic. However, she went on that the supply chain constraints, as they're called, which means the food transportation system and stuff got mucked up. She said that's been resolved, but the prices have not come down. So, there's speculation that, and it's, I think, a bit beyond speculation, that the large corporations have just held the prices up because they could, right? That is mixed in with what Beth Hoffman is talking. I mean, I'm willing to give the farmer more money, but I'm not happy with the corporations taking a larger chunk for their shareholders.
I don't think all this extra money is trickling down to the farmers.
No.
And we complain about the cost of eggs and the cost of bananas, and nobody ever seems to complain about, the cost of cell phone service or the cost of
insurance, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Everything has gone up. So
football tickets. Nobody complains about that.
Concert tickets, right?
Yeah, nobody's out under. Everything's going up. Yes, it is. So here's five reasons why paying more for food is, health, number one. That is, of course, because people that spend their time growing good food can give you a better product.
Well, this does not mean that you should pay more for your potato chips and Pepsi-Cola.
Right. Okay? But buy good food.
For your spinach or your lettuce, maybe, or your apples.
Yeah. And it supports your community. Rural communities, talking about getting money directly to farmers, that's a real good thing.
Right.
And when you think about the price of eggs, politicians have been talking about the price of eggs. Huh. Well, so say $4 is the price of eggs. That is only 30 cents an egg, more or less. And I don't think you get a lot of other things that are that good for you as a organically raised, healthy egg. It's not really all that awful to pay much. And besides, those girls work hard for those eggs.
Well, I'm willing to pay at least $5 for a dozen of really good eggs. You open them up and you got that golden yellow. It's worth it just for that.
Yes. Here's some notes from Beth. A six-pack of 7-ounce Mountain Dew is $6.28, huh?
Well, we wouldn't know because we don't buy that garbage.
Well,
excuse me.
Party-sized bag of Doritos is $5.94, and Cocoa Krispies is $4.98, and a Big Mac is not cheap. A Big Mac costs over $5. So who's complaining about $4 eggs or $4.50 or? There's some gotta be kind of aware that things are going up all over. And also number four, why you should pay more: your taste buds. Your taste buds are an underrated thing in our society. Is I think we should learn to taste good food.
I think our taste buds have been dumbed down by lots and lots of processed foods. And you have to realize when a company is making a product, they are in the lab, man, testing. Okay, if we add this much of that, does it make it taste better? There's some sort of addictive qualities that go along with your taste buds. You know, we have learned to like sweeter foods and saltier foods, neither of which is particularly healthy.
Right.
But those are cheap ingredients, salt and sugar.
Right. And we're getting more and more ultra-processed foods. The fifth reason to spend more on good food is your family and your family's health. 70% of what kids eat and 60% of the foods adults eat are ultra-processed. Processed foods, so that they've been kind of tinkered with a little bit there. Spend some money on some real foods.
Yeah, and good do a little cooking.
Good for you.
Cooking is fun.
Family. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Good. Good. Well, apples and good stuff from the garden and I like
it. I want you to know that the cider is not an ultra-processed food.
Oh. Well, no, it shouldn't be.
It's just apples.
Cider is just apples.
Well, it's pressed apples. Yeah. And then, of course, because the law requires it these days, it's all pasteurized, mm-hmm. which means it's, you know, heated up to kill off, well, it takes the enzymes out, but it also reduces, you know, bacterial content and keeps it from turning into alcohol while it's sitting on the grocery shelf. But
That's good. That's good. Well, of course, then there's hard cider, which is another good invention. So
well, and there's more and more of that around. Quite nice we're
quite
doing in the hard cider.
Three cheers for fall and cider and apples.
Actually, I mean, sorry to the Iowa wine producers. I know there's some decent fellows out there, but I would prefer if I want to drink a local beverage. I like the hard ciders that we're producing in Iowa. Some pretty good stuff here.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, we have some upcoming things to talk about. We often mention PFI Field Days, and PFI Field Days, we can go out and meet your farmer and learn all kinds of good things. They've been going on all summer. But one is coming up next week on October 1st, and it's called Year in the Life of a Goat with Farmer Adam Levina. And this is a Spanish-interpreted field day. There's a lot of multilingual people out there that are interested in small-scale farming. So Farmer Adam...
Oh, I thought maybe the goats were speaking Spanish.
Oh, I don't know. Just a short thing here. Maybe you should check that out anyway. Yes, you can contact Valeria at PFI. Her phone number is 515-232-5661. That's a field day about the year and the life of a goat.
I'm sure it will be good. Goats are always fun.
Goats are always good. And coming up this Saturday, Central Iowa Barn Dance.
Oh, boy.
We have a Facebook page. Find us there. And also next weekend on Donnell in a Kitchen, we have a special guest, author Michael Perry from Wisconsin, humorist, author, musician, a good guy. It'll be
a great Midwestern voice. It should be a really fun show. Good. I am looking forward to that.
Good. You've been listening to the Donnell in a Kitchen. We had music by the Barn Owl Band today. You heard the waltz, Cloud Forest. And we'll go out with a tune called Bullet the Wagon. Support this fine radio station. KHOI, we get by with a little help from our friends. My name is Lana Noctigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering and a good memory for limericks by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.